AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 187 for March 15th, 2013. What's coming next in automotive interiors? Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLine.tv every Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine in iTunes, Stitcher, or by following the links on our website.
John, how are you?
It's good to be back with you, man.
Yeah, good to be back here.
And we got to say hello to this character, too, Drew Winter from Ward's Auto World.
Good to be here.
Hey, Peter. On the show. So, Peter, you got to explain. We've got this big picture that you had Chip Brake bring to the studio. And explain what this is so the audience understands the new addition to the studio decor.
Yeah, that's A.J. Foyt's Indy car at Indy in 1966. Powered by Ford, and at that point he started to call his modified mid-engine chassis Coyotes.
So this is the first Coyote?
I think so. I think it is. This was the race that AJ got knocked out early on, and Graham Hill went on to win as a rookie, stunned that he won. And also Jimmy Clark finished second after spinning twice during the race, not hitting anything and keeping going, but that's in the pit lane. This is from the website fordimages.com, and I warn our viewers, if they go, or listeners, be careful because you'll want to get...
You'll lose the whole day just going through all the pictures.
You'll want to get something, and this happens to be a stretch canvas close-up of AJ's car.
Now, it's number two. I thought AJ's race cars were always number 14.
No.
Clearly not.
Yeah, that year, for some reason, it was number two. I'm not sure why.
Had he raced number 14 before that? Do you know?
You know, I don't think so. I think 14 was on his winning car in 67.
And then from that point on, no matter what he drove,
right.
Just about, not just Indy cars, always 14.
And Tony Stewart, you know, called AJ when he was going to do his NASCAR team and said, I'm going to take 14 in honor of you. And AJ said, that's awesome.
That's a good story. I figured there was some connection between the two because it is a famous race number.
Well, people have suggested that Tony Stewart is the closest thing
to AJ.
A modern-day AJ.
I would agree.
In his diversity, able to win anywhere on any track.
Mm-hmm.
The Coyote, what's the significance of that? I'm just...
You know, AJ's car builder, they came up with that name. I'm not quite sure about that.
Because I'm just thinking there's a Coyote and a Ford Coyote engine now, right?
Well, that Ford Coyote engine, remember at one point AJ took the building of the Ford IndyCar motors, he took over building those. And then he called them Foyt Coyotes or Ford Coyotes for a while, but, you know.
Hey, later on in the show, we'll have Klaus Busse, the head of interior design at the Chrysler Group, coming on. But there was another designer in the news, Henrik Fisker, quitting his own company. What do you guys make of that?
I was sorry to see it, but the only thing I can think of is that they're negotiating with a Chinese automaker to buy them. I've got to think that they're looking at more proletariat-type cars. I mean, the original Fisker model was sort of very much like Tesla, where you have this high-end high-end car, and then you have another car coming in around $50,000. It's luxurious, and then you have another one down below that's still luxurious. And I've got to believe that they're saying, well, the market for that's too limited, the engineering costs and everything. Let's go to something that's more simpler, more along the lines of a Chevy Volt or whatever, who Tony Posawatz, who's running the place now. I've got to think that's in order to keep the company viable.
Right.
That's what they're looking at. And Fisker, I would speculate is Fisker just said, I don't want a car like that with my name on it. That's not what I got into the car business for.
Well, I think Henrik went down the wrong road. I think he got caught up in his ego, and, you know, he's a talented designer, but, you know, I think...
I think the mistake is, you know, to break into the car industry is damn near impossible. So if you're coming in, you better come in with something nobody has, either totally new car technology, and he doesn't. I mean, it's an extended range electric vehicle a la Volt. And that's, yeah, to your point, Drew, kind of interesting. Tony Posowitz, who had run the Volt program pretty much, is now running Fisker. Or you better come in with some new process breakthrough like Toyota did with the Toyota Production System that nobody else has. If you're just going to try to do it on styling, lots of luck, because you're up against the best design studios in the world. And I felt that the car was doomed from the start just from that reason alone.
Oh, yeah, and the footprint of the car, it's a big car, massive car, heavy car.
And it's still beautiful, though, and it's unique. I mean, the design is, I think, very...
Yeah, but you know, hot designs are almost a dime a dozen these days. I think Henrik just got lost. He just got lost in the hay.
Well, they had a lot of bad luck.
Yeah, he lost the government funding, too. I mean, that's what Tesla benefited from, hitting its targets and getting $500 million or whatever. And Fisker had a chance at that and didn't hit its deadlines. So that certainly hurt.
He got lost in the haze of his own ego, let's face it.
Well, my theory, it's, you know, the biggest faults of male egos are you buy a sports team or you try to start a car company, and, you know, usually neither one turns out all that well. You know, DeLorean had a brilliant idea of having cars that you don't paint. I mean, the most expensive part of making any vehicle is painting the exterior. He came out with this great idea, we're not going to paint it, we're going to make it stainless steel, but... Again, yeah, ego and everything else caught up with him, and lack of money.
Yeah, another development that we just saw. Peter, and this is right up your alley, General Motors undoing everything that Joe Ilawonek had done at General Motors from an advertising standpoint.
Yeah, you know, they've been on a jihad to do that. And, you know, so now the Commonwealth, this agency that was formed with Goodby and McCann as equal partners to do Chevrolet, now McCann is going to do all of it. And Goodby is going to retain some dealer group business and things like that. And McCann was already controlling Chevrolet globally, but just not here in the U.S. Now they're getting it all. And... you know, I put this on the site. GM has overreacted over Joel. You know, they've said, oh, well, we're going to go the opposite direction. We don't need a CMO, especially a rock star CMO, whatever. We don't need one. Well, they do need one. They need a marketing leader. And Alan Beatty is a sales guy from Australia that Mark Royce brought, because Mark worked with them. Good guy and all that, but he's not a chief marketing officer. And the fact of the matter is, the longer they don't do that, guess who the functioning chief marketing officer is? Captain Queeg.
Dan Ackerson.
Yeah.
Just to translate for those who haven't caught on.
So, you know, I think this unwinding of anything Joel touched is just, you know, they're just doing it.
And what do you make of all the Cadillac business going to Campbell-Ewald, which just left its long, long, long time headquarters in Warren, Michigan, and moved into downtown Detroit?
Well, this has been in the works. I mean, the moment Chevrolet was yanked from Campbell-Ewald, Michael Ross, who heads the Interpublic Group of companies, which is the holding company for Campbell-Ewald, all of a sudden was acting like a junior account guy and coming to Detroit every month and talking. And that move, by the way, is going to happen at the end of this year. But I think that is the result of Michael Roth lobbying General Motors upper management to get Cadillac. Fallon never really worked. You know, that was – Joel had two friends in the business, Pat Fallon and Jeff Goodby. He worked with them before, and they did great work together. The assumption that was going to happen again might have been a mistake. But the ironic thing about Cadillac being yanked is the most recent Cadillac campaign, the ATS campaign, was very well received, and I thought was very well executed.
I would agree with that. And in fact, Cadillac sales the first 2 months of the year are up almost 30%, largely on the ATS and the XTS.
Because there was a lot of skepticism that there was the CTS pricing. They were pricing CTSs to move, and people were going to ignore the ATS to get a better deal on the bigger CTS. And then I was happy for them to see that the ATS was getting its just recognition. And doing real well. And the XTS, too. Fantastic interior in that car.
XTS is nice. Yeah, so anyway, Fallon took a long time to get up to speed, and there were a lot of problems. But
Fallon did that series of ads for the ATS, did they?
Yes. But I tried to explain it on the table on the site. This is a political thing. IPG wants to get as much GM business as possible. And so what does IPG own? Well, they own McCann and they own Campbell Ewald. Now, there's some rumors that Publicis, which has Buick GMC and Chevy Silverado, which was pulled out of Goodby right at the end of the year, there's talk that IPG is going to buy Publicis or something, so that, IPG and GM are, they want this link. So there's so much behind the scenes stuff that goes on with these moves that people just don't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you spent a lot of years in advertising. I mean, are you a Mad Men fan? I mean, is it as much a snake pit as Mad Men portrays?
It was much worse than the real world. I mean, Mad Men's interesting and all that and kind of fun. I love the era and the clothes and stuff, but the real ad world is...
Far more vicious than a TV show, huh?
Vicious and wild, too. Of course, it's all calmed down now. Now it's all politically correct and group hugs and, we don't want to offend anybody, but...
Nobody loses a leg to a lawnmower in the office.
No.
Hey, big, we were talking about this picture of the A.J. Foyt IndyCar that you brought in. Other big news, ALMS and the Rolex series, officially together with a new name and logo.
Yeah, they officially unveiled that today. They start racing in 2014. It's the United Sports Car Racing Series. And I joked on Twitter, at least they didn't call it the United Sports Car Racing Collective. But it's kind of a benign name, and they've got a new logo, and everyone was waiting for this, big announcement of the name, like there was going to be something to it, and it's pretty boring, Fortunately, the emphasis should be on the product they put on the track, so.
And I see Bridgestone signed up to be on the Delta Wing car with Panos. Huh?
Yeah, that was interesting because, Michelin... really invests a lot in development and racing. And I think Michelin played a key role in the success of the Delta Wing early on in the development and bringing it all together. So it'll be interesting. You just don't bolt new tires on a car and it works. So, most of the key players are not involved with Delta Wing anymore. So it's kind of running in limbo.
I'm going to be odd. Moderating a panel discussion at the SAE Congress next month, all on does motor racing still hold any relevance for production series cars? And Ben Bowlby is going to be on the panel.
Good.
So I can't wait to hear what he's got to say as to, what the hell's going on with Delta Wing, at least from his standpoint, because he seems to be out of it now.
Yeah, I'm going down to Sebring tomorrow. So.
Oh, really? Yeah.
We'll see it run again, and along with the last visit of the Audi turbo diesels, apparently, because the Unified Series, they're not going to run over
here. Not going to be allowed, huh?
No, they're just not going to run over here, I guess.
Hmm. Drew, did you follow that Audi news that they're introducing so many more diesels too?
Yeah.
In the U.S. market?
Yeah.
Because obviously elsewhere, that's not news.
Yeah. Well, lots of people are doing it now. I mean, we're seeing it, Mercedes has more. We've got certainly Chrysler is light-duty diesels going into the Ram, as well as a Grand Cherokee.
And, Wrangler, too, didn't they?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know if they're confirming that yet or not. But yeah, I mean, that's what we're seeing, that certainly Chrysler with more of its European heritage. They're pushing diesels more, but we're wondering, you know, GM and Ford had some really nice light-duty diesels that were sitting on the shelf, and then everybody chickened out when the economy got bad, and diesel fuel prices went up here. But they've got a couple they could take off the shelf and throw on some pickups now, too.
Drew, you remember that super engine that GM did right before the bankruptcy?
Yeah.
That won an international award. I mean, it was quite the thing. And so they still have that on the shelf, right?
Yeah. I mean, there's a bunch of good stuff out there. But it looks like now everybody, you know, at one time Nissan was going to introduce a 3-liter diesel. And there was a whole bunch of them, and everybody but the Europeans had chickened out. Now we'll see, you know, how many more are coming. And it's going to be interesting to follow because it's just with the Chevy Cruze and some of these others.
Mazda 6, right?
Mazda 6, are they going to get accepted, you know? I don't know, but it's going to be fun. I mean,
yeah.
Well, to me, this is the year of the diesel. This is the year, I should say, that we'll learn if diesels are really going to start to catch on in the U.S. market.
Because that was supposed to be like 2008 before everybody canceled all their programs.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, when to your point, when you've got Chevrolet with a mainstream car like the Cruze, Jeep with an iconic vehicle like the Grand Cherokee, Mazda coming in with a low compression diesel. I keep saying, if these things do even reasonably well, everyone's jumping into the pool. That's what I think. And to your point, these on-the-shelf diesels at Ford and General Motors will be dusted off and put into production fairly quick, I think.
Well, that GM engine had the exhaust out the center of the the V.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, the intakes on the sides, the exhaust out, and I guess that was for packaging the turbo.
Yeah, you had your turbo sitting in the V there, and a lot of people are doing that now.
It won all kinds of awards. I think I don't know if your publication singled it out, but I remember that, and they've talked about the guys who worked on it, and it was a big deal.
Yeah, the reverse flow and all that
right,
stuff.
Right, but it never went into production. So, you know, they might have gotten an award for having a beautiful paper design. But,
well, they had it in a car.
They had it finished.
People were driving it and stuff.
Oh, no.
And it was ready to roll. And then they
chickened out, as
it
said. How about Peter Schwarzenbauer leaving? Well, he left Audi, and now he's going to BMW.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Because he did great stuff, and he got shuffled in the musical chairs thing at Audi, and now he's going to BMW.
Well, you know, never a dull moment in this industry. Hey, why don't we take a quick commercial break and let's get our guest, Klaus Busse, to come on the show. So, Ben, let's give a shout-out to our friends at Bridgestone. Klaus Busse, welcome to Autoline After Hours.
Thank you, John. Always fun to be here.
Not only that, but you brought one of your toys with you, this Grand Cherokee in the studio.
It's a big toy, isn't it? The good old 2014 Grand Cherokee that we just in the progress of launching. Quite a project we're very proud of.
So you're in charge of all interior design. Have I been describing this right? Have I promoted you properly?
No, you have not promoted me. It's actually the job that I do indeed have. It's all brands, Chrysler, Jeep, Ram, SRT even. So, yeah.
But always the interiors.
Always the interior. That is correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
So, Klaus, tell us briefly about your career.
If you can call it a career. I grew up in Germany, as you can hear from the accent.
Really?
Yeah. It'll give away in the name too, right?
Who knew? Yeah.
But I started actually at a German company, Mercedes-Benz, back in the day. And then during the merger days, I came over what was supposed to be an exchange program for 2-3 years. And then in 2008, when the companies decided to go different ways, I decided to stay here at Chrysler, you know, with the good guys.
That's great. Little did you know that everything was about to go off a cliff, right?
You know, the clouds were assembling on the horizon. It was summer of 2008 when I made the call, but we didn't quite think it was that bad. Having said that, you know, the good thing is in design office, we work in the future. We see the crystal ball. So while even going through the bankruptcy, we were already working on, you know, the 300, the Charger, the Durango, the Grand Cherokee, all those products that would later become the foundation of the turnaround. Those were already well underway. So it was a risk that was not too big. I mean, the parents of my wife back then thought I'm flat out stupid, but but it turned out to be the right decision.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've always seen this, particularly in Detroit, some of the best products come out when the automakers are really, their backs are against the wall.
Sure, they get focused. And, yes. There's no nonsense. There's no BS. It's like, boom, this is going to work. Go for it.
And generally, I think you can say the worse the times, the more need is there for creative people because they need new ideas. So it was a good time for design office, as it is since.
Mm-hmm. And they're willing to take risks.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
So Drew's publication sponsors an interior show,
yes,
right? And that's coming up soon, right,
yeah,
Drew?
Yeah, May 22nd. They told me, yeah, make sure everybody knows. May 22nd, we're hoping to get some great designers like Klaus to come in and speak. And we have a good lineup. We have a student design competition where we're working with students at the Center College for Creative Studies now. With a great instructor from Ford working these young students to come up with new ideas, fresh ideas for interiors. That's part of the program. We do our 10 best interiors where we're in the middle of right now. We're testing about 50 new cars to come up with what we think are the 10 best interiors for the year. And then we have our overall conference where every year we try to explore, where interiors are going, new materials, new concepts. We've got a conference, a session this time where we're looking at getting ideas from other industries, from the environment. You know, how does this whole design process come about? And I know Klaus has talked about how he was inspired by different, for the Cherokee, different countries,
different
cities,
landscapes. Yeah.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the interior that we have in the vehicle here is a brown interior, but it's inspired by the Grand Canyon. And because what we did is, when you start these processes of coming up with new colors and materials, there's the temptation to look at what's happening in the fashion industry or anything that men already created. But you put yourself in a bad position because you're looking at something that someone did a year ago to do something that you want to come out in 3 years, so you're 4 years behind the ball. And Jeep is so iconic, we didn't want to follow trends, we want to set trends. And so we looked at areas that are truly timeless, which is nature. And there are a couple of really, really cool locations we looked at, and the Grand Canyon, of course, being an iconic American destination we looked at. And we look at the Grand Canyon, you will realize there's no chrome. So we took out the chrome and we replaced it with copper, which has this really nice warm tone. So now we have this brown leather wrapped instrument panel, the brown open pore wood, and now we complemented it with a copper, and it gives this interior a really unique feel. And I was really excited to see when I walked the Detroit Auto Show or the Geneva Auto Show recently, there was no other car with a chrome trim that I could find. So we actually did come up with something that could maybe start a new trend.
And so then, other than going to the Grand Canyon or the Ward's Interior Show, where do you go? What are you looking for? How do you come up with new ideas?
Yeah. You cannot pinpoint one thing. We designers, not me, us as a breed, us in general, we walk through life with open ears, open eyes. It could be a documentary we see on TV. It could be a good meal in a different country. One thing that always leaves an impression is like walking the Champs-Élysées in Paris in the middle of the night because you see beautiful architecture, beautiful people, beautiful food. It does not give me an idea for a certain color or a certain shape, but it just puts you into a creative state of mind. And you understand French cars also when you see this kind of environment. So it's really, seeing beautiful things that inspire you to also create beautiful things versus I want to copy this shape.
Because, we have a guy coming in. He's president of a medical devices company, but he speaks to automotive groups fairly regularly on how to use, he's another industry, but he looks at the anatomy and he views humans and the environment and how they work and creates devices that for new joints or whatever. But it's still the same sort of inspiration, looking at nature, looking at how things work and adapting new designs. And he's got a fascinating way of looking at the world. Yeah. And so,
I was reading an article about video games, about there was a new video game coming out and they decided to keep the controls exactly where the main seller kept the controls because that's how people used to play certain video games. And even there, you think there's a certain piece of wisdom, because why should I recreate or mess with how people operate a car if there's a proven way? And a lot of time, journalists actually get frustrated with me, because when I admit I not necessarily read automotive publications, because I browse the internet. Today you have all these wonderful apps that put together your own newspaper, and there are topics like philosophy, healthy lifestyle, luxury lifestyle, and those apps crawl the internet and give you, you know, these interesting things. And that's where, you know, you find these nuggets of ideas where you think, wow, that's interesting, let's try that, versus having it pre-digested in a certain publication.
One of the trends I've noticed in the last few years on the interiors of vehicles is a lot more attention being played to ambient lighting.
Yeah.
You know, where the door handles are backlit. There's light pipes running along, maybe even across the front of the instrument panel, down the sides of the car, creating a whole different look and feeling. Is that something that you guys are into?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, who does not remember at least one beautiful sunset at the beach? Okay, and it's all about the light. And when you do photography, you know when not to do the photo at 12 o'clock at noon, but to do in the morning or in the evening when the light is perfect, the warm light, the cold light. Light is so magic in our life. And to put it into the car in the right context, I'm not a fan of putting it right on top of the instrument panel where it reflects, right? Because at the end of the day, it's all about safe driving. But life can create a beautiful atmosphere, a beautiful emotional context that, yes, of course, there's a right place in the interior of a car, too.
Yeah, and the progress they're making is incredible. I mean, this, like the new Cadillac XTS has, there, you know, before you used to have the kind of light pipes and stuff, but now it looks like, I'm not exactly sure what they did. It looks like they put LEDs, like, underneath, like, some of the trim, but then there's a gap there where the light just kind of glows.
It's indirect lighting.
Yeah, it's indirect lighting, and then it reflects off the shapes of the door and everything, and it's real subtle, and it looks kind of modern, and it's
very inviting.
Yeah, it's a beautiful effect. And then, at our conference, we've got a lighting supplier talks about the psychographics of light, where, you know, they say, well, like, the older you get, you start to like minty green colors, and then when you're younger, it's red and what all this stuff, and it's wild what they're doing. But I think this has got to be what light is like—a huge new design element.
Well, light. I think we're breaking the code on light. But if you want to talk about frontiers, I think a frontier for us is connectivity. You know, it's getting all these technologies in the car. And at the same time, providing a saving driving environment, not only for you, but the people around you and the traffic. So light, absolutely. But in terms of what keeps me up at night is certainly the connectivity, the safe driving.
So speaking of connectivity, the Uconnect system has won all kinds of awards. It's a very well done system. Did you play a role in the look of the screen on that?
Yeah, so interior design, my responsibility does contain, apart from the shapes and the colors and the materials, it does also contain the graphics and the screen. And now in the cluster, now that we started using, you know, big 7-inch displays in the cluster. So my team is responsible for the graphics. The stuff that makes it happen in the background, the network, we have a fantastic team of engineers under Mauro Zinios taking care of that. But the stuff that you see, we're working with HMI to create an overall user experience within interior design.
Well, I do like the graphics. I like the fonts, the colors, the shapes. It's very well
done. You know, it's one of these things where I think we learned you don't want to be the first with crazy stuff in that area. You want to do something that people are comfortable with. And I think you mentioned the awards we've won recently with that system. It put us in a good place, and we're happy to be there.
Do you have, like, nightmares at night thinking about autonomous cars? I mean, everybody's talking about them now. And is that going to totally change the interior?
I can't wait. I can't wait because there will always be the time where, yes, I drive an SRT8. I love driving a car. I love taking it to the racetrack or, you know, within the legal rules of our system.
Or not.
Well, and on the road. But, I went to Germany not too long ago and it came, you know, you take the overnight flight, you get there in the morning totally tired. And I wanted to, visit my aunt for her birthday. And I thought, okay, do I take the Challenger SRT8 from the Stuttgart office, which we had back then, or, and I ended up just taking the train. nice seat. You can do your Wi-Fi thing. You can do your emails. You can take a nap. So autonomous driving, not to get your adrenaline going or things out of the system, but getting safely from A to B, doing some work on this side, having a conversation, and get there with a nice, quiet pulse and the energy then to party. I think there's tons of opportunity, especially in this country with those vast distances that we have.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the Grand Cherokee, since we have one in the studio here. You know, what I've been so interested about this vehicle on is that it's only 2.5 years, I think, into its cycle. Yeah. It went through a refresh. Yeah. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you did on the interior and what led you to do that.
Well, you mentioned a very important point. You could say there was no need to do it. We're selling, you know, the leather-wrapped instrument panel. How quickly we can produce them is what's dictating sales. We sell them. So one might wonder why going through the expenses, but I think it speaks to who we are now as a company. It speaks to the fact that we don't rest on our laurels anymore. We will not be the generation that will let this company slide again. So we want to build on the success and get better and get better. So we already had, thanks to Drew and his colleagues, an award-winning interior, and we have an award-winning Uconnect system. So it was natural to combine the two things. So we put the 8.4-inch Connect system into this vehicle. We also enhance it with what we now have in the company, the 7-inch display in the cluster, plus the analog on the side, which is a fantastic opportunity for us to safely communicate with the driver and allow a safe driving environment. And then enhance, you know, this color and trim story that we talked about, these Grand Canyon-inspired packages. We have the Dynamica headliner, which is the same product as Alcantara. It has better stretchability, so we could use it with the sunroof headliner, but it's basically like Alcantara and other things. And then, of course, it has the 8-speed transmission now, so it needed the electronic shifter, right? So we took a product that sells fantastic, made it even better, so it'll stand the test of time.
One thing, too, that I'm seeing in a lot of cars these days is a lot more attention being paid to the seams on seats. Everything's going with French seams these days, or almost what I'd call double or triple French seams.
Yes.
What's the thinking behind the industry moving that way?
It's all about detail. Look at fashion, right? If it's all in the details. When you look at certain brands, I don't want to name them and turn this into a commercial here, but there are certain really cool brands out there that really excel on details. And it's the same on the interior. It just shows that you care. Whether it is, you know, the little Easter eggs that we do in our cars, right? When we molded in the Laguna Seca racetrack on the Viper bin, right? Because we hold, we held the lap record, and we might hold it again. We'll see. Or the Nürburgring, right? We do these little Easter eggs. And the same thing is with seams. It's just the additional extra detail. And it allows you to bring in a color or two, which is not overwhelming. You know, the sister ship of the Grand Canyon is the Vesuvius package, and where we use really nice, rich, dark blues, dark browns. But then we have this surprise, really white piping on the seat. If you would do too much white, it'll be too much, but it'll allow us to just bring in a touch of color, you know, just like the icing on the cake.
And plus the technology to create that stitching and whatnot, it's less expensive now, right?
So because it's cut and sew, you need some kind of stitch anyway to hold the thing together. So you pretty much, cost-wise, you're already there. But now it allows us to really, rather than doing a tone-on-tone stitching even, you can play with some accents and throw in a few surprises. Even on the journey, we had like a pearl, a pretty almost white-colored seat, and we had orange stitching. And that was something really fresh that did very well on the West Coast.
So is that what we'll get in terms of a dash of color in the interior? Because one of the biggest complaints I always hear is, geez, we get a black, a beige, or a gray interior. That's it. So is that another reason why we're seeing some of these off-color, maybe that's not the right way to say it, different color stitching and the like to add more detail and color to the interior?
So just look at a good meal, right? There are always the same ingredients that make a good meal. What the chef will do, it'll slightly change some of the spices. So look at those details as the spice. We will not do an orange instrument panel or a pink instrument panel, but we can do an orange accent stitch, get away with it, and actually show that care for detail. So it's you know, the stronger the color, the more careful you have to use it, just like spices.
So of your competitors, who have done some interiors that you like?
You know what? The French are doing, how they come back with this French avant-garde kind of style. You know, some of the Citroën interiors that they, I'm impressed with. They seem to master quality with what we all think of French cars. Some of the avant-garde design. For some reason, you know, the pricing of the cars seem to bite them now, so they struggle. But there's some really cool product out there. Here stateside, you know, whether you believe it or not, I think for the value proposition that we have, the segments we're playing it, I'd take our product over anyone any day.
Do you see with the economy now slowly improving, does that influence the color choices and things like that? I mean, it seems like, you know, in the 50s or in times when the economy's going good, you see these brightly contrasting colors and very flamboyant interiors. And then when the economy gets bad, everything gets more conservative.
That is a very interesting question. And to be honest, I never thought about that.
Oh, okay.
But I better start paying attention, although I don't hope we're going to get another recession in my lifetime. But no, frankly, our decisions were not led by that thought, by that motivation. But it's an interesting one. I got to take a look at that.
Where do you think trim in the interior is going? Woods, you know, carbon fibers catching on a whole lot more. Even just interesting moldings in plastic. There's some interesting things going on.
So you say an important thing, plastic, right? Plastic has this annotation of being something really, really bad, especially when it comes to car interiors. I think plastic's downfall is the name. Mm-hmm. If you look at Alcantara is faux suede. It's an artificial material, but it has this wonderful name, okay?
And, but there's different types of Alcantara.
Well, there is.
There's some that look like dish rags.
Yes, and there's
and others that are very fine.
There's different kind of plastics, but you know, in Germany, we actually have two names for plastic. One is plastic, and that's what we categorize the cheap stuff, and one is Kunststoff, which means artificial material, which usually is the high-end plastic. And I'm, you know, when I meet with the suppliers, I said, don't show me the cool stuff. Where's the cool marketing name that comes with it? Because quite frankly, if you look at consumer electronics, there's nothing wrong with plastic. Okay, the high gloss white plastics that certain companies use for cell phones, etc. Plastic can be used really, really cool. Just not animal grain and gray and flat like, you know, some interiors that slipped out in the past.
Mm-hmm. So what you seem to be saying is we'll see more interesting uses of plastic?
So I can't really make you any promises, not because I don't want to talk about future product, which of course I would not anyway, but more it is an interesting time where we are at, led by the consumer electronics. Again, if you look at, you know, cell phone cases, iPhone cases, for example, right, you can buy all kinds of finishes, rarely real wood. You'll get fake wood. And so there's a generation growing up thinking, yeah, it's kind of cool to imitate wood and better than, you know, cutting down that poor tree, okay? At the same time, we find ourselves now with, as we get more adventurous with our colors, literally, as we go around the planet, adventurous with our colors, we find that the wood grain is actually not taking us where we want to go. We would like to see a certain color in there. And you can't get that unless you find, you know, chop down the last tree of that kind in Southern America. We will never do that. So we start engineering these wood grains and truly create an engineered, man-made appearance. And at that point, I think we're crossing that line where there is the need for real wood, but something that is, you know, man-made and gives you much more opportunity.
Well, you really broke the ground in the U.S. with the open pore wood on the 300 luxury last year.
What's the open pore wood?
It's a matte. Well, you can explain.
Well, basically, you know, wood in a natural phase is open pore wood. It's rough, right? You see the pores. But what in the past has been done is you clear lacquer that thing and seal it for all kinds of reasons. Now technology is advanced enough that you can still seal it very thinly, but you maintain the open pore, the real wood, authentic feel. At one point, you could say we were pushing it for a while, and there were voices that felt, is the customer ready? Because we trained the customer to look at wood as being high gloss, okay? And now suddenly you take the gloss away, and people might think, is that still wood? Of course it's wood. So there's a story that needs to be told alongside. But yeah, we now also in the Grand Cherokee, we're pushing for open pore wood as it gives you the more natural feel. And it fits, you know, a brand like Grand Cherokee, which still depends on authentic materials like real leather and real wood.
And then we're seeing a lot with the lighter color, the blonde colored woods, and then the matte finishes on these. So more, we can kind of run your finger over them. It feels much more natural. And then even on the Longhorn edition that you got, they actually, for trim, you have, what it's fence posts or something, actual fence posts or...
Well, on the Longhorn, we have a couple of really unique things, especially in the truck segment. Of course, the open pore wood that you're mentioning, real metal that has engraving that is inspired like from like a beautiful rifle, an artisan rifle. So there's and then we have on the seats we have the laser etching, you know, inspired by let's say cowboy boots, for example. So authentic materials in an used in an authentic way.
And I mean, you know, you've got pickup trucks now that are being, you know, handcrafted like Aston Martins practically. It's crazy the stuff that's going on.
Well, for me it was really eye-opening to take a trip down there and meeting one of these gentlemen down there with this big ranch, and his daughter was in the bull riding competition, and they showed me the rig. Like, there's this trailer which is, you know, a couple of $100,000. The horses are super expensive, so they're pulling like $500,000 worth of gear, and I thought, wow, you know, that deserves a special vehicle to pull it.
Yeah.
And those people would never buy a car from southern Germany. They want a pickup truck, but they still want to have these amenities, the luxury, what they have in their living room. And when you see the living rooms, oh my God.
Yeah.
So why not give them that kind of atmosphere on a truck? And I think that's what we did.
Behold, the $65,000 pickup truck is what.
Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of profit in those trucks. Hey, let's get to the questions from our viewers right now. Ben, it's time for rapid fire. Let it rip. Okay, Klaus, Chuck Grenchy wants to know, has there ever been any thought on offering adjustable armrests and or center console height adjustments?
Yes, there has been, but we settled with the fact that the seat is adjustable up and down, that would solve that problem versus making both of them adjustable.
Mm-hmm. Will we see that center console adjustment?
No, I think you're not going to see that from us in the near future, because we believe that the adjustability that we offer within the seat should hopefully put you in that comfortable seating position, including the armrests.
Dr. Nick wants to know, when will we see OEM supply holders in the dash for phones or tablets to be plugged into the car infrastructure, allowing them to become the entertainment control center for the car without a manufacturer-supplied head unit?
Yeah. So I was mentioning earlier that this is the big frontier that we're facing right now with connectivity. And believe me, we won't be the only one looking at opportunities like that. What everyone has to ask themselves is, do I always want to carry that device with me? Do I always want to spend the extra effort and time to dock it, for it to start and load before I can get going? How many times do we find ourselves running quick errands where you just want to quick get in, grab that bottle of milk, go back to the house without worrying, oh, did I bring my tablet to dock it? So there's a lot of advantages, but I see a lot of disadvantages too. So the future will say.
Very interesting. VRM Chris says, is there going to be a greater use of natural materials in the interior?
We already use excessive amounts of natural materials, right? The leathers, the woods, etc. If he's referring to, natural in terms of replacing plastic, I think plastic is going to stay in the interior in a good use for a long time. But we use excessive amounts, not excessive, we use large amounts of natural materials, you know, in this vehicle here behind me with the leather and the wood, et cetera.
And the filler materials, there used to be a lot of glass fiber and things in a lot of the interior panels and the plastics, and now they're using a lot more natural filler materials that are flax and
yeah, some absolutely, of the, correct.
So it's more natural and it makes it easier to recyclable.
There's a lot of fiber below the skin where you don't see it. Seats especially.
Uh-huh.
Swivel Buckets wants to know, how closely do you work with Ralph Gilles on these vehicles?
Oh, he's my boss. My boss, and I'm happy to say he's my friend, too. So we have a very good working relationship. And just prior to coming to this show, I spent, how much time did we spend, Ralph? 3 hours reviewing programs. So we interact daily.
Peter, I'm going to throw this to you because there was a second part to it. What about that four-cylinder Mustang reportedly coming?
I think that's the way of the future. I think absolutely. And if they can deliver a Mustang that has, 260 horsepower and base trim or something, why not?
Why not? Right. It's all about power and power density. It doesn't matter necessarily how many cylinders are
right.
there. Yeah. Except from a sound standpoint.
Right.
Yeah. I think they're talking even more horsepower than that for that engine.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Close to 300.
Yeah.
Klaus, speaking of sound, do you get involved in the interior sounds of a vehicle?
We make sure that we get a canvas that gives us an enjoyable driving experience, which means the cabin is quiet to begin with, okay? And I think we've done a fantastic job with the 300, the Grand Cherokee, even the Ram. Where I do and my team actively get involved is the sound of button clicks. And you'll see that going forward much more, because the click subconsciously speaks quality or not, right? So we are involved with that, even chimes. So everything that's part of the user experience, we are involved.
Yeah.
Now, how about a couple, Acura and Honda are using sound cancellation to mute some vibration, and then you have folks like Ford actually running a sound pipe from the engine manifold to the interior to get to get some pleasant sound.
Yeah.
Do you work in, is that your area as well in interior design?
No, it's not. That falls into overall vehicle engineering where we use dual pane, thicker glass, dual layer glass, and do certain, natural materials, mm-hmm. use them for sound insulation from engine block to the compartment and also underneath the floor. So, but that falls into the engineering department.
Wright Knight's got a question that I should have asked you earlier in the show, so I'm glad Wright Knight did. Why not use a very thinly cut marble or stone as an interior treatment?
So during my days at Mercedes, they had developed that. They tried it in the S-Class Coupe.
Had granite, right?
Correct.
Yeah, I remember that.
The C215.
Yeah, look cool.
It didn't take off. Mm-hmm. It didn't take off. That's all I can say. There's also what people must not forget is there will occasionally be the accident, the head impact scenario. And to control thin layers of stone not flying through the cabin and cutting you is also an issue. But Mercedes had it in that car back in the day. It just didn't take off.
Wow. I remember it looked pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you bought that one car.
Oh, yeah. That was a little out of my range.
I first read about it in Warren's.
Yeah.
AAH Guest 494 is asking the question that we wanted to know. Is that Jeep Wrangler going to get the diesel?
I work interior design. Uh-huh.
What do you think of the Lambo Veneno styling?
Well, I usually do not comment on competitor product, good or bad. I did good with the French interiors, but it's an interesting car. I think Lamborghini has defined how far you can push automotive design before you get ridiculous or even beyond.
So did they step over the line, or?
It's an extreme car.
Yeah.
We also launched the LaFerrari, right, which plays in the same league. I mean, the LaFerrari being a car from 0 to 182 miles per hour in 15 seconds. I mean, how much more extreme can you get? And you look at that, and it's pure beauty, okay? I had the chance to look at it in person, and it's just such a beautiful thing. And then, the beauty and the beast, right? There's always there's matter and there's antimatter, wherever you want to go philosophical-wise. And I think the Ferrari in terms of beauty and the Lamborghini in terms of being extreme define the playing field. I don't think you can go more extreme. I don't think you can go much more beautiful in this kind of car class than the Ferrari. Everything else will fall in between.
Roman Koch says, do you have input on the interiors of cars like the new Alfa that are coming to North America?
There's a lot of collaboration amongst engineering and powertrain side with platform strategy, et cetera. But in terms of styling, whether it's interior or exterior, we here in the U.S. do the U.S. portfolio, and our colleagues and friends in Turin do the Italian portfolio.
Mm-hmm. And we touched on this a little bit, but George from Brooklyn wants to know, what all are you doing for sustainable interior materials?
Yeah. So the key is, of course, is recyclability. And you can do two things. You can either use material that then can later be recycled, or you use material that has been recycled in the first place. So, of course, those are topics that need to be addressed, absolutely.
HTG asks a good question. He said, I'd like to hear some talk about the potential for weight savings in the interior. How much do those seats weigh, he wonders.
Well, the seat itself, the leather or the foam, is not the issue. But if you want to have eight-way power seats, heated and ventilated, and we all enjoy those comforts, that comes with a certain weight because those are motors that drive the seat. You could save weight if you would the seat only allow go four back and up and down one at a time, but we like to go diagonally up, so it needs two motors driving at the same time. So if you don't want to have the weight, we do offer manual seats, and they just don't have the power motors. So there's the opportunity to choose.
M360's got a good question. He says, I'd like to hear what differentiates an interior from a luxury car from the rest of them. He says, some car makers seem to feel all their luxury cars, all that they have to need is leather seating. And he wants to know what differentiates a luxury one. And he goes on to ask, what about switchgear that's not flat, but gives a look and feel that you don't feel elsewhere?
Well, it depends what the gentleman defines as luxury. I mean, if you want to go all the way up to Rolls-Royce and Bentley, where cars are almost like custom-built one by one, you can do anything you want. If you go into mainstream luxury, then it becomes already like part of the company portfolio in terms of what components you have. You see that, you know, in a case in Germany where we have a manufacturer that goes all the way from an entry vehicle to super sports cars, but you see commonality in certain of those gears. Because it takes a lot of time and ingenuity and testing to get an electronic switch to be perfect. So you probably won't see us do variations there. Apart from that, I sometimes think we miss the topic when we think of what is a luxury and what is not. I don't think the discussion is about luxury or whatnot. It's these days it's content driven. We expect safety, we expect quality, we expect good design, but what extra content do I get in my interior? That for me is a more interesting discussion whether something is considered luxury or not.
I heard a great comment today from a guy. He said, a luxury car is an occasion when you drive it,
yes,
rather than just driving it, you know.
Correct.
And but how is that occasion, that means a whole different thing than what it maybe meant 10 or 20 years ago when it was just leather and wood. And like when you talk about the interface, look at Tesla, the Tesla S model, where the whole, the interface is all on a giant, really kind of like a giant LCD screen. And that's all the controls there. So, I mean, automakers are experimenting with all kinds of stuff.
Okay, we'll veer off here, Drew. Chip wants to know about this month's cover feature on Russia's Gaz Motors.
Well, that was a great story. We had our editorial director for the WardsAuto.com went to Russia and met up with Bo Anderson, who's really well-known the Detroit area. He controlled a $100 billion budget for General Motors and then jumped from the frying pan into the fire in 2009 to get out of GM and then run a failing Russian automaker. And he's there. He's doing an incredible job turning it around. And now he's becoming more, and now he's going back to making cars for Russia. They just got a big contract with General Motors. They're making cars for other people. And starting to get, after firing something like 50,000 people,
fired upon himself.
Yeah. So, but he's just done, and it's really interesting, I think, for folks in the Detroit area to see this guy, you know, this former Swedish Army guy did, but he stepped in and is turning around this giant old company and making it viable again. It's pretty cool.
It is. Okay, back to questions for Klaus. Scott in Cleveland wants to know, is there a Dodge Challenger redesign on the horizon?
Your viewers should know by now that we can't talk about future product because we don't want to spoil the surprise, right? So we'll see.
We'll see. I'll bet there is. Dr. Nick's got another question here. He says, if you order from the factory, how custom could you make an interior? Could you mix and match across packages?
It's a good question. I think you can push the envelope a little bit, but we will try to keep you in a sane environment. Because what we do is we have certain exterior colors, certain interior colors, certain finishes, and we would hate to let a car slip out that one individual might like, but everyone else thinks like, oh my God, what did Dodge produce there, right? So I think the packages that we have created for people to play with are aesthetically approved. And you can vary slightly, but not too much.
Hey, going back to that one about weight savings, is that something that you get involved in? Is that anything that you are? And one of the reasons I ask this is during the AutoLine Supplier Symposium, we had a guy named Jim Kamsikas from IAC, the interior supplier. He says, hey, I can pull 30 pounds out of the interior of a car. Why don't the car companies come ask us for weight reduction?
Because he wants to have 300% more money.
Yeah.
I don't know about that particular case. No, seriously, the weight saving is mostly with engineering. But the good thing, I think what makes us strong at Chrysler, there's a strong collaboration between the design office and engineering. So we do work hand in hand and review everything. Is there a smarter solution, whether it is cost, of course, weight? Because at the end of the day, it's the overall package that sells, and we try to find every gram that we can to make the car as light and therefore as fuel efficient as possible.
You're not to plug our conference too much, but we do have a session on that very topic, and we've got some folks from Lotus Engineering come in. They've done a lot of research in that area, and a lot of it has to do with parts reduction and getting fewer parts means a lighter vehicle, and then of course lots of lightweight materials like magnesium and aluminum and even some carbon fiber in places. So, but to Klaus's point, some of it is very expensive, and you got to figure out a way to do it cost effectively.
Well, I got one promotion I got to make before we go here. There's a reason why I've got this cardboard box sitting next to me on the chair, and it's because we got another care package from our friends at Katz's Deli in New York, who are big fans of the show. And about once a year, we get this tremendous care package from Katz's Deli, which has been around forever. I mean, it goes back to the 19th century that it's been operating there. So I want to tell everybody in the kitchen, everybody at the counters, at Katz's, thank you. We're going to eat good tomorrow. They've got the best stuff, and it's so cool when these packages show up.
Can you share the Chrysler Design Office address with them?
Yeah.
We should, because I'm telling you, it's killer stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, Klaus, thanks so much for coming on and bringing a Grand Cherokee along with you.
Always fun. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Drew Winter, thanks for joining us.
Great being here.
Yeah, which was just a nice way for you to slide in stuff about the interiors conference.
Well, I can attest it's a great conference.
Yeah. And Peter, as always, good seeing you. And thanks for bringing in this AJ artwork, I guess is what I'd call it. It's more than a picture.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a great addition to the studio.
Yeah, it works good.
I want to thank everybody who has tuned in, and please join us again next week.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone. Your journey, our passion.
Visit our website, autoline.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine This Week. There's all that and much more at AutoLine.tv.